Good morning. I mean, good evening. Welcome to Left Out on WRCT. I'm Danny Slater.
I'm Bob Harper.
Left Out is a program dedicated to perspectives left out of the mainstream media. Today's program is produced by Jay Thurber. Listeners are welcome to call us at 412-621-9728 or 621-WRCT or send email to robert@leftout.info. So today we have several different things to talk about, and we're hoping that you'll get interested and give us a call. And the first topic I wanted to mention and talk about was the speech that Al Gore gave last week on May 26th at NYU. And it was a really superb and impassioned speech, and quite unusual for a mainstream politician to give a speech of such kind of brutal honesty and power, I thought. So we have a couple of excerpts from the speech that we want to play. Then we'll talk about segment, and then we'll play another segment. So go ahead, let's hear the first one.
The soldiers who are accused of committing these atrocities are, of course, responsible for their own actions, and if found guilty, must be severely and appropriately punished. But they're not the ones primarily responsible for the disgrace that has been brought upon the United States of America. They're not the ones who designed the policy and put it in place. Private Lindy England did not make the decision that the United States would no longer observe the Geneva Conventions. Specialist Charles Grainer was not the architect of the American gulag of dark rooms with cold, naked prisoners to be stressed and even, we must use the word tortured, to force them to say things that legal procedures might not induce them to say. These policies were designed and insisted upon by the Bush White House. Indeed, the president's own legal counsel briefed him, advised him specifically on the subject. His Secretary of Defense and the Assistant Secretaries of Defense pushed these cruel departures from historic American standards over the objections of the uniformed military. The judge advocates general within the Defense Department were so disturbed and so upset and so opposed to this policy that they took the unprecedented step of coming as a group to seek the help of a private attorney here in this city who specializes in human rights. And as a group, they said to him, quote, there is a calculated effort to create an atmosphere of legal ambiguity where the mistreatment of prisoners is concerned. Indeed, the secrecy of the program indicates an understanding on the part of its authors that the regular military culture and mores would not support these activities, and neither would the American public or the world community. That's why they tried to keep it secret. Another implicit acknowledgement of violations of accepted standards of behavior is the process of farming out prisoners to countries less averse to torture and giving assignments to private contractors who are accountable, apparently, to no one. President Bush himself set the tone for our attitude towards suspects in his State of the Union address in 2003. You may remember this. He noted that more than 3,000 suspected terrorists had been arrested in many countries, and then he added, and many others have met a different fate. Let's put it this way. They are no longer a problem to the United States and our friends and our allies. Did you react to that the way I did? He promised to change the tone in Washington, and indeed he did. Tragically, as many as 37 prisoners may have been murdered while in captivity, though the numbers are difficult to rely upon. because in many cases involving violent death, there were no autopsies. How dare they blame their misdeeds on young enlisted personnel from a reserve unit in upstate New York? How dare they say this is the work of a few bad apples among enlisted personnel?
Well, that was Vice President Al Gore speaking in Boston last week, I think
New York.
It was. In New York a week ago. And this is we're broadcasting this from a version that's or transcript that's available on moveon.org.
It's actually on our website, leftout.info.
It's also linked on leftout.info if you're interested in hearing the whole speech. So we'll play another excerpt, but I thought we might comment on the part we've heard here.
Yeah.
The first thing I think of is the ridiculous portrayal. This is the first I have heard of the speech. I read the speech about a week ago when it first came out. I read the transcript of it, but I hadn't heard it. But I have heard of it because in the right-wing media is portraying Gore as foaming at the mouth and going completely off the deep end and absolutely, you know, out of his mind and behaving like Howard Dean and so on and so on. And, you know, I dare say that the vast majority of the listeners to the right-wing news outlets of propaganda machine haven't actually heard
right.
Gore give the speech personally.
Yeah, it's a really there are a few impassioned moments in the speech, but and we'll hear another one
coming
later
up
on.
A little later.
Yeah,
I see.
But so, I mean,
but there's nothing
really
out of line about any of this.
No,
I mean,
it's just the kind of the unconstrained just honesty of just staying the way it is, that these guys are completely inept, that what that happened in Abu Ghraib was due to what they had done. I mean, all of these just declaring these obvious things that we all, you know, we all know them, but but this is unusual for a mainstream politician to say it so unequivocally,
right,
without any, you know, if ands or, you know, or qualifications or the proper language, the beating around the bush.
Beating around the bush, yeah. And they said, well, we're going to be beating Bush around the head with this one, which I think is entirely appropriate. You wonder, though, I mean, where was this Al Gore? I mean, this is not the first speech he's given criticizing the administration. He's given others in New York, one at NYU, I remember, a few months ago, that was also sponsored by Move On, primarily to do with environmental issues.
Right. And Where was
that Al Gore? You know, I was thinking about that earlier today. Well, one thing, of course, is that none of this had happened at the time that he was running for re-election nearly four years ago. So there wasn't this particular sources of outrage that have been perpetrated on us by the Bush administration. So I think that that's certainly one aspect of it. But still, personality-wise, I mean,
yeah, it's completely different.
It's completely different.
And Gore was just so docile during the campaign. He would never come out strongly against Bush, even in the places where Bush was the weakest, in the environmental issues, Texas's record in the environment and stuff like that. So,
I mean, it bears comparison with Kerry's behavior in the current campaign. I mean, it's been commented on numerous times recently that Kerry is not really anywhere to be found in the news in the last couple of months.
Well, it's one can only hope that when he's elected, that personality will actually come out more clearly, you know, as a president.
Right. One theory about why he's keeping quiet is the principle that you should never get in the way of a good train wreck, and that may well be his strategy. I mean, as long as Bush is self-destructing, which he certainly is, then why bother getting in the way, especially now with roughly 5 months to go to the election. He has plenty of time for that. So that may be one thing. But I sort of fear that he. There's something about running for president which requires satisfaction of so many constituencies that you end up sliced and diced and compromised.
End up being so kind of mild.
Yeah.
Everything has to be
generic and toned down, and
the
edges are rounded off.
Well, like what you said about the way Gore was attacked for the speech,
yeah,
and the way Dean was attacked for his similar emphatic speeches that he gave.
Yeah, and for no good reason. Yeah. I mean, if you ask me, for no good reason whatsoever. I mean, the thing that energized a lot of Dean supporters, including me, that's for sure, was the very fact that he would say openly what is going on here and what is wrong and express his outrage. That was the thing that made him so popular.
Yeah.
And you would think somehow that for Kerry, now that he's going to be the candidate, would learn from that. Instead, it's only minor candidates like Dennis Kucinich is certainly extremely open and emphatic in his criticism, but he gets no press coverage.
Right.
It's a curious thing.
So shall we hear the second?
So let's listen to another segment.
Excerpt from the speech? Yeah.
From Gore's speech.
We have an election coming up. And in my opinion, John Kerry is dealing with this unfolding tragedy in an impressive and extremely responsible way. I believe that our nation's best interest lies in having a new president who can turn a new page, sweep clean with a new broom, take office on January 20th of next year with the ability to make a fresh assessment at that time of exactly what our nation's strategic position is at that time, when the reins of power are finally wrested from the group of incompetents that have created this catastrophe for America. I do not believe that John Kerry should tie his own hands by offering overly specific, detailed proposals concerning a situation that is rapidly changing and unfortunately rapidly deteriorating, but should rather preserve his and our country's options to retrieve our national honor as soon as this long national nightmare is over. General Dwight Eisenhower, who campaigned during the terrible time of 1952 when the Korean War felt like a quagmire, did not propose a five-point plan for tweaking America's approach. Instead, he said, "I will go to Korea." It is responsible and in the best interest of our nation to have a new president who is capable of assessing the situation when he takes the oath of office. And you know, when a business enterprise finds itself in deep trouble that is linked to the failed policies of the current CEO, well, the directors and stockholders usually say to the failed CEO, "Thank you very much, but we're going to replace you now with a new CEO, one who is less vested in a stubborn insistence on staying the course." One of the strengths of democracy is the ability of the people to regularly demand changes in leadership and to fire a failing leader and hire a new one who offers the promise of hopeful change. That is the real solution to America's quagmire in Iraq. But I am keenly aware that we have 7 months and 25 days remaining in this president's current term of office, which represents a time of dangerous vulnerability for our country because of the recklessness and demonstrated incompetence of the current administration. It is therefore essential that even as we focus on that fateful choice in November, we must simultaneously search for ways to reduce the extraordinarily high level of danger that we face with this current leadership team in place. It is for that reason that I am calling today for Republicans as well as Democrats to join me in asking for the immediate resignations of those immediately below George Bush and Dick Cheney who are responsible, most responsible for creating the catastrophe that we are facing in Iraq. We desperately need a national security team with at least minimal competence I'm dead serious. Because the current team is making things worse with each passing day. They are endangering the lives of our soldiers and sharply increasing the danger faced by American citizens everywhere in the world, including here at home. They are enraging hundreds of millions of people and embittering an entire generation of anti-Americans whose anger is already near the boiling point. We simply cannot afford to further increase the risk to our country with more blunders by this team. Donald Rumsfeld ought to resign immediately as the chief architect of this plan. Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, the intelligence chief Stephen Cambone, all ought to resign immediately. Our nation is at risk every single day Rumsfeld remains as Secretary of Defense. We need someone with good judgment and common sense. Condoleezza Rice ought to resign immediately. She has badly mishandled the coordination of national security policy. This is a disaster for our country. And they are responsible, along with the president and vice president. We may have to wait to get rid of Bush and Cheney, but we ought to call on our Republican friends to join us in getting the rest of that team out right now.
Well, that was Al Gore speaking in New York about the war in Iraq and the characters in Washington who've perpetrated it on the United States. If you wish to call in and discuss Gore's speech or any of our topics that come up later, you can get us at 412-621-9728 or send mail to bob@leftout.info. We'll be monitoring electronic mail. So, Danny, what did you think about that segment of the speech?
I thought, well, that's probably the part that the right-wing zealots thought was like with Gore going crazy.
How dare he be emphatic?
Yeah, right. How dare him say the obvious?
Yes, exactly.
So I thought that this – I really liked the way he turns around things that are considered to be strengths of Bush and points out that this is idiocy.
Right.
For example, staying the course.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks of staying the course. That's regarded as a strength of George W. Bush. He can stay the course. Yeah. And that's their whole campaign theme, right?
Yeah.
Consistent leadership in times of change, something like that.
Yeah.
But it's ridiculous.
It's complete nonsense.
As he points out, what's what you do to a CEO who's messed things up?
Yeah.
You fire them. You boot them instantly.
Or as General Zinni says, where the course that we're on, that they wish to stay, is heading right over Niagara Falls. And Lord knows he has some competence in military affairs, unlike the rest of these clowns.
So there's a lot of other stuff in the speech. I highly recommend that you listen to it in full, and it is on our website.
So we have an MP3 audio on the website,
right.
And we also have a transcript linked on the website.
Because he talks about a lot of other issues and justifies everything he says with much more detail throughout the speech.
Yeah, it's a very compelling speech. I think it is interesting how it's painted. He's been painted as, you know, completely losing his marbles. When if you bother to listen to it, I would say he's only making sense. And going back to the point you mentioned earlier, I mean, one point that I have often made in the last couple of years is that even if you believe, for example, that attacking, invading Iraq was the right thing to do, you nevertheless have to admit that the whole operation was executed with singular incompetence, that these guys are absolutely appallingly bad at pulling this off. So even if you're someone who buys into the Richard Perle or Paul Wolfowitz line about what we should be doing here, you have to admit that it's a complete botch, right? This situation is an absolute botch. And that's one point that Gore is making very clear.
Right.
And I assume that he wears their vilification as a badge of honor, because obviously he's hit the mark. That's why the chimpanzees on the right, especially on the right-wing talk radio, have been swinging from the chandeliers and throwing their feces and screaming and yelling about how Al Gore has completely lost his mind by dare saying the obvious about these incompetence in the Bush administration.
Okay.
There's a sort of a related point as well, which I've often made to people when I talk to them, is another fact is, in addition to their incompetence, is that, you know, I'd be interested to hear from callers about this. It seems to me that, setting aside, also if you look at it from the point of view of liberal and conservative, I think that even if you're a conservative, you have to be outraged with these guys, because whatever they are not conservatives. I mean, a real conservative would not support the invasions of privacies and the decimation of the Bill of Rights that John Ashcroft has been attempting and continues to perpetrate on the country.
Right.
That is not a conservative position. The conservative involvement, their involvement at the national level with issues, for example, like the legal definition of marriage, that is not a conservative position. Their fiscal policies are not conservative. Corporate welfare and cronyism is not a conservative political position. I mean, I think
why have the conservatives been so supportive?
Well, I think real conservatives aren't that supportive, in fact, is one answer. I think I know many people who I would consider to be real conservatives who consider these guys to be absolutely anathema. So I think that's one point. And I think the other point is just pragmatism. I mean, it's lust for power. And the word conservative is somehow used. I don't even know what it's supposed to mean. It seems to mean, you know, crony capitalism combined with disregard for the Constitution, combined with a unbelievable blundering in international affairs. That seems to be what the modern definition of conservatism. Then you wonder, like, well, who could possibly support this? And I think the answer is, well, primarily the people who are getting the payoff.
Right.
I mean, it goes back to, you know, it's the old story, right? The famous line from the Watergate era was, follow the money. All you need to do is follow the money, and then you know who is supporting him and why. You know, why is Fox News so strongly behind Bush? Well, it's a matter of money, isn't it? Who is the chairman of the SEC? Colin Powell's son. You know, what are the policies that he's trying to advocate, trying to allow organizations like Fox News to have even greater dominance of the media and make greater amounts of money by having control over advertising and market share in the way that they do?
Right. And the whole... the ability to merge into larger and larger entities with more and more power.
Right.
All of these make more and more money. All of these things are just, you know, great. The Bush policies have benefited them tremendously. Regardless, they may not like the war in Iraq, but hey, we're going to get our great payoff.
Yep.
And many, you know, corporations who have overseas headquarters who are reaping huge benefits for the tax cuts.
Yeah, and if you
all of that,
and if you think about it, you ask yourself: so, if this isn't conservatism, and it certainly isn't liberalism, then what is it? Well, you have to look. You don't have to look too far back in time for a historical precedent where we see the marriage of government with industrial interests, the glorification of the leader, the emphasis on the emphasis on the centralized government, the emphasis on military power, the heavy use of propaganda, the aggressive foreign policy. Where have we heard this before? This is all of the underpinnings of fascism. Now, I know you're not allowed to say this if you're a member of the mainstream media or a politician. It makes you a kook if you say that these guys are fascists. But in fact, if you look at it, the origins and the underpinnings of fascism were exactly the marriage of corporatism with the government. I mean, Hitler and Mussolini's relationships with large companies at that time, military. In particular, military suppliers, weapons manufacturers, and so on, is well known, well documented. No surprises there. And as I said earlier, the glorification of the leader, you know, the emphasis on military might, you know, the suppression of dissent. This is all characteristics of fascism. Now, certainly, we haven't gone as far down that road as, you know, late stage fascism was, that we all think of as the outcome of World War II and the horrors that have been committed. It's true, we haven't gone that far yet, but certainly the starting points are the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, really, that's what we're looking at here. We're not looking at conservatives. We're not looking at liberals. So I would, implore our listeners, whether you're a conservative or a liberal, to realize you've got to vote against these guys. I mean, they don't represent you, no matter what point of view you are. If you're a fascist, well, okay. If then I guess Bush is your guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a whole long discussion that we could have maybe some other show about what are the things that. Well, a lot of people still support Bush, and so and we can't. Bob and I are having a hard time figuring out
who they are
and why. So it'd be very good to try to analyze that and get a better idea of what's going on. And so that's a good discussion to have.
If you want to call us, if you would like to call in, the number is 412-621-9728, or you can send mail to bob@leftout.info. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back. We have a few other topics to discuss.